Welcome to the Fall 2008 GDUC Morning Program. I'm Ann Kaiser, your president, and we have one wireless mic that has to kind of make the rounds all over the place, and then we have the one wired one. Can we? Okay. Oh, they're conducting business here. All righty. So, without further ado, we will start announcements. To my left, we have not a really huge agenda today, but we do want to get started here pretty soon. So we'll start introductions to my left. Okay. I need to find there it is.
I have the wireless microphone. This is Jerry Arakawa, GDUC Vice President.
Hello, this is Pam Metz, board member.
Dan Kaiser, your secretary, and my dog, Hilly.
We are so sorry, and I have Maiden. She is a GDB dog.
It's
she's
early.
4 years old, and she's working real well at this convention with this bright red general leader on, okay? She is black, 21 inches, 62 pounds.
Okay, yes, well, I have Tova. T-O-V-A, a three-and-a-half-year-old yellow lab from Guide Dogs for the Blind, 21 inches, 55 pounds.
And you want to pass this to Mary Beth?
This is Mary Beth Randall, treasurer, and I have my three-year-old yellow Labrador Tennyson.
Hi, I'm Mike Keithley. I'm the editor of the Blind Californian. I had four dogs, but I don't have a dog now.
Pat LaFrance Wolf, and I have a 9.5-year-old black lab, Shannon, from GDA.
I'm Dee Dee Mann, and I have a new guide dog. We'll be together a year at the end of next month, and his name is Zinni, and he is a yellow lab, and he weighs about 61 pounds and growing.
Hi, my name is Lee Morton. I'm the editor of Forward. Hope you guys are enjoying it. I have Ed. He is missed, and definitely the way he barks in his room, he is definitely the talking Mr. Ed, the talking dog. and he is from Guide Dogs for the Blind Oregon campus, and he is about 23 and a half inches and around 70 pounds. And Elaine sends her regards from Oregon. She's enjoying her retirement and going camping and swimming in the river and all kinds of stuff.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Nikki, and I have a yellow lab named Coral from Guide Dogs for the Blind. I'm a newbie in the guide dogs world because I just got her in this January.
Microphone on your left.
Thank you. Hi, you guys. My name is Linda Samolsky. I'm formerly Linda Flores. Oh, thank you. And I'm sorry to be such a grouch, but it's hard to hear when people are talking, you know. So if people need to talk, they should go outside. I'm sorry to be such a meanie, but...
We know how you are,
sorry,
Linda.
I know. But I just moved from San Diego to Palm Springs. I took a job with Guide Dogs of the Desert, and I have Buster. Buster's my third dog from Guide Dogs of the Desert, and we just graduated in April, so he's a newbie, too. So he's a cross golden retriever, yellow lab. Goldador, yes.
Goldador.
I'm Donna Lewis with my guide dog, Rhyme, yellow lab from Guide Dogs for the Blind. She's 8.5 years old.
Hello, my name is Belinda, and my doggie is from Guide Dogs for the Blind, and her name is Valley. She's a Valley girl, and she will be 10 in December.
Wow.
And she's number 4. She's a golden retriever, and I've had all female golden retrievers.
Microphone.
This is Christy Crespin with my guide dog, Fila. She's a little, not quite a pocket puppy, about 55 pounds from Guide Dogs of America. And this is probably going to be her last convention. I'm going to be applying again, and I've been talking to schools, and I said, when you're going on number 8, you have a very big list of things you like and things you don't like.
That's true. That's for sure.
Hi. I'm Ariel Gilbert, and I have my brand new female long-haired German Shepherd named Splash with me, and we're from Guide Dogs for the Blind.
Good morning. My name is Melissa Hudson, and I have my first guide dog, Anya. She's a black female Labrador Retriever who'll be 7 at the end of January. Oh, Guide Dogs for the Blind.
Ken Metz, and I have Flora, a black lab retriever from GDB. Dog number, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. They're cheaper by the dozen. Dog number 12.
They're like, oh, God.
My first dog was June 23rd of 1963.
Man, they had harnesses back then?
Well, at that time, they gave them to 2-year-olds.
Hi, my name is Steve Flerman, and I have a black lab male dog named Gipper. He's 5 years old. I got him when he was 22 months from Guide Dogs of America.
Hi, I'm Cindy Flerman. I have Pedro from the Seeing Eye. He's 5, and I've had dogs since 1977.
Good morning, everybody. This is Nellie Emerson, and I have Wicker. She is a German Shepherd from the Seeing Eye.
Hi, good morning, everybody. This is Richard Retta. I hope to be your newest member. I haven't joined yet. And I have a Seeing Eye dog, hails from the Jersey coast. His name is Handy. He's a 75-pound black lab.
Hi, my name is Penny Valdovinos, and I have a guide dog from the Seeing Eye. She's 5 years old. Her name is Brenda. She's a golden retriever.
And one more.
There you go. Hi, my name is Trepidation at this point. I'm Tony Candela from Department of Rehabilitation, and I'm the department's representative to the California State Guide Dog Board. I have a carbon fiber folding stick.
Get with it, Tony. Get a dog now. Yeah, come on.
I feel very lonely. I call my stick, "Hey, you."
And that's it. Does anyone want the wireless mic?
All right. Pretty good turnout. This is great. Welcome, everyone. And their dogs. I have Black Lab Daytona, who just turned 6 a week ago Thursday. And she's number 4 for me, and I got her from Guide Dogs for the Blind, Santa Fe campus. So that's it.
She passed.
I didn't, but she did. She was fine.
No, she's fast.
Oh, is she? God, is she fast?
No.
Actually, she is. She has her. You know, 3 speeds. She has overdrive, and she has, you know,
more overdrive.
And then she has hyperdrive, which is very dangerous. No, she's a good girl. Anyway, so without further ado, let's move on to the reading of whichever set of minutes our secretary has handy, first thing. Take it away, Dano.
The wireless.
Okay, I got it. I'll just use, this is one-handed braille. And so here's the minutes for September 8th, 2008. It was a teleconference board call. President Ann Kaiser called the meeting to order at 7:10 p.m. Members present, board members present were Ann Kaiser, Jerry Arakawa, Mary Beth Randall, Lee Morton, Debbie Flowers, minutes for the meeting of July 30th, 2008 were read and approved. Treasurer's report. Our current balance is you actually improve the economy when you read with one hand.
Yeah, that was my vacation money.
$3,348.04. It's $3,348.04. The board discussed topics for the fall convention program. Pat Wolf will arrange to have a veterinarian to speak. I'm sorry, I'm so slow. It's one finger to speak on the topic of dog allergies. Subjects will include most prevalent allergies, causes, treatment, and prevention. We've discussed the GDUC booth. The booth will. We will conduct a 50-50 raffle as well during the fall convention. We will continue to sell mugs, shirts, and other products sold during the spring convention, the last spring convention. Dan will contact an artist to develop a humorous picture for a t-shirt for possible sale at an upcoming future convention. The executive director of the State Guide Dog Board asked Dan if Tony Candela could give an update of activities of the State Guide Dog Board during GDUC's lunch program. The board decided not to devote time for an update from the Guide Dog Board because it is anticipated that the lunch program will be quite full in respect to the school updates. Lee will ask Pat Wolf to send a copy of the GDUC brochure and for board perusal. Mary Beth stated that it was time to send out membership renewal notices for next year. The next board meeting was discussed, and it would be held on Monday, October 13th, 7 o'clock p.m. The meeting was adjourned at 7:55, respectively submitted. Dan Kaiser, and I'm wondering where my October 13th minutes are. So I will look for those. That's my report on the September call, and I'll hand it back while I look, so you guys could do the treasurer's report, and while I look this up.
Well, got Jerry's coffee instead of my microphone. I'm doing well. Okay. Any discussion, corrections of the minutes?
Move the second.
All right. I hear a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Okay. Well, while we're waiting to see if Dan has the last set of minutes handy, we'll turn it over to Mary Beth.
Oh, great. Okay. Morning, everybody. And I want to thank Pat for getting the membership letters out to everybody. And I'm already receiving dues, so I'm very happy with everybody. The sooner we get dues in, the sooner we get our money to GDUY and all that kind of good stuff. So I will start with, let's see how far I can do this from. During March of this year, the board of directors discussed the fact that we are paying $120 a year, and it doesn't sound like much, but it's money that goes out of our account for service fees. So I went and spoke to the people at our bank and found out that we could get a different account that we could then get that fee waived, and still it would still be a checking account. And so in March, I established a new account, and at that time, until a couple of things had gone through, I put $100 in that account and then kept the rest of it into our other account. And so between the two accounts, at that time, we had a balance of $3,476.52. Then, through the course of the time between, we've had expenses totaling $1,265.98. And some of those expenses were the ordering of more shirts, because they've been so popular, and paying for our affiliate dues for next year for CCB, our exhibit table in a one-page ad in this fall program, and convention funds for those of us who went to the ACB convention, and paying for an ad at the ACB convention so that we could sell some of our shirts there. And that was extremely successful. As a matter of fact, there were some people who also took my number and subsequently purchased shirts after ACB convention in July. So that was pretty good. We were very happy about that. We made, just alone from that, we sold $375 worth, so that was pretty darn good. Then we have had a total income at this point of $1,241.50. And some of that money is already dues that people have paid up to this point, which I'm very happy about. And so currently, our balance in the account is $3,369.04. And that's the current report. And I wanted to report real quick, too. People who we normally send get notices both from us, GDUC, as well as GDUY. If you've already been a member of GDUY, this year you are not going to get a notice from them when they go out. They're only going to be sending letters to members of GDUY who are not associated with an affiliate of GDUY. And so that'll be something that'll be a little less confusing for everybody. So definitely make sure you look for your letter that's from us so that you can get your dues to us, and also go out and pay them now if you were able to do so. That would be great. Pat Whitehead from the puppy raising group here and that group are helping with that, and so they'll make sure that you're all taken care of. And I believe that is all I have.
Thank you, Mary Beth. Excellent report. Is there any discussion or corrections to this report? Move and second. All those in favor? Aye. Oh.
There was a question.
Okay. Who had the question?
Linda.
Linda?
I have a question in that
Hi, it's Pat Whitehead, and what I'm going to do while you're having the membership, I'll very quietly come around and see who needs their membership. So we'll come from table to table, and we'll quietly help you with the check, which is $20, and it goes for GDUC, GDUI, CCB, ACB, right? All of those. And you get paw tracks, and the other one is, I don't have it, forward. And those come, and you'll tell me, do you want it email or do you want it on tape? So I'll come around with the list, or David Hudson, who's also my ABLE assistant. We also will have some toys in the back later on. We'll have the soft exercise pens set up. So those of you who are interested in those can try your dogs and see about that. And we're just here generally to help. We also have puppy toys if you need any or want to get any Christmas presents. Also, we're the Poop Patrol. Why don't we mention it once while we're here? And one of our jobs is to maintain the cleanup area or just generally look around for little Tootsie Rolls that may still be there. And I do want to say, if any of your dog, more information than Dan needed, he said, if any of your dogs have what I call pudding poop, if you would get, I hope we don't have pudding for lunch, if you would tell us, we'll go out, and if you are partially sighted and can go over to your right and pick up some of the chips or the dirt that's on the wood chips and just put it on top, because a couple of the dogs that have looked like they had a little stress there, and then people step in it and walk in it. So that's what we don't want to happen. Only happened yesterday morning, last night, or the night before and yesterday morning. You're doing great today, so keep up and keep picking up your good work. Okay, thank you.
Okay. All right, any further discussion or questions regarding the treasurer's report? All right, hearing none, we had the motion and the second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, before we go any further, let's give the LA Southwest Puppy Raisers a humongous round of applause. Oh, my goodness, yes. We are, once again, doing the old 50-50 drawing, and that will be drawn at the banquet this evening. So that gives plenty of time for more sales. So hopefully we'll make a whole pot of money and somebody else will win half of it. So that'll be great. All righty. I want to send a great big GDUC best wishes to one of our board members, Debbie Flowers, who had a pretty bad auto accident here. How long ago was that, Mary Beth?
In September,
and suffered some pretty serious injuries, so was unable to attend the convention. But she is recovering, and I think has just gone back to work and started using her dog again. But we just wasn't quite up to the trip here. But let's send her our best. So we'll be looking forward to seeing her in the spring, hopefully.
Madam President?
Dan.
We were unable to. I brailed out the wrong set of minutes. We do have October 13th. However,
there's a convention plan.
That was an organizational meeting about the convention, and pretty much everything in that meeting will be discussed today. So I recommend that we... cancel those sets of minutes and not worry about them, and all of that information will come up today. I guess that's a motion.
Second.
Okay. I hear a motion and a second to let those minutes dispense with those, since they were pretty much just convention planning stuff. So all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Very good. Okay, since you're there, Dan, you want to hand him that microphone, Jerry? Do you have any website update?
Okay, those of you who attended the CCB board meeting Thursday night will remember a long discussion about the website. And the fact that they're trying to work out a system whereby affiliates of CCB can use web tools to make updates and changes to the website. And also the website was transitioned over to acb.org back in July. I wasn't aware of that transition back in July. I just found out about it about 2 weeks ago that they had that now they are officially moved off Earthlink acb.org. And that was a slow process because there's a lot of content, there's a lot of videos, there's a lot of large audio files, and so on and so forth. And they had to do it in such a way that everything had to appear normal. And so they probably had two sets for a while. You know, as it may, the point is that they're not in a position to have affiliates go up on the web yet. And I'm hesitant about recommending that we get a private site after our last experience. You know, we have the technical ability that if we get a web tool from Joel Isaacs or whoever is going to be doing the CCB website, that we have enough technical ability within this group to operate a web tool. It's an accessible piece of software you don't have to know the web language. You can simply type in what you want it and how it should look, and then it will upload and make the changes on its own. So it's kind of a neat thing. It allows just your average person to, you know, Joe the plumber, to do a website.
You betcha.
Let's not say we did. Anyway, so that's the latest on that, and I'm sorry that we don't have a presence on the web. You know, it's been way too long. Nobody's happy with the fact that we're not on the web. We're not getting audio out to people from our conventions. We could have the forward up there, you know, that people could just go up there. So I don't know what else to do, really. Until we just have to continue to sit and wait unless somebody else has a bright idea. Unless somebody wants to slap up a website right now and get it done with.
Dan, I have a question. The GDUC website, what's going on with that? The listserv.
Yeah. Actually, I was going to bring that up, too. Go ahead and talk about it, yeah.
Diana Sandel, my assistant in the my coworker in the CCB office, and I sat down and went to Google Groups. The thing about Google Groups, they have a spam filter on the front end, and so we're not subject to, you know, those of you who have been on GDUC-L have noticed that Yahoo Groups passes spam through their servers. But Google Groups does not, and that's why it's appealing to go to group, as you know, on CCBL. Since they've gone to Google Groups, there's been absolutely no spam. So when we went to get on, Google Groups, you had to look at these five numbers and say, okay, what is that on your screen? And I was prevented then from accessing and creating the site. So
Dan, there should be an audio link so you can bypass that.
We did, and I couldn't understand the audio.
Yeah, thank you.
Somebody else had tried that too.
Oh, yes.
The audio is absolutely terrible. He goes, "We're trying to watch one for what?" And I went, "What was that number?" So when things settle down in the after the convention, I'll get Diana and I to do that again. We tried it, her and I tried it, and something happened. My computer locked up or something, and then she got a bunch of phone calls, and then the convention came up, but when things settle down, I'll get the Google Groups. It'll be GDUC at googlegroups.com. Is that a good name for it? All right.
Richard, would it be possible? I'm going to take executive privilege here and see if we could sweet talk you or prevail upon you. Maybe you could get with. You guys could get together via phone and work out all the details and get it on there as soon as possible. Maybe Richard can assist you with that process.
Dan, are you back in the office on Monday?
Yes.
Okay, I
want to
be
No, I'm back in the office Wednesday.
Okay, I'll call you this week, and I can set up in 2 minutes and get you to drilling.
Okay.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Excellent.
Hey, good
Yay, Richard. Now, at one time, the GDUCL was a pretty darn busy listserv, and I really want to see that up and running again and active like it used to be. So sooner we can get that process in motion, the better. Right. Thank you, Dan. All right, membership. Ms. Pat LaFrance-Wolf, do you have anything newsy for us?
If you did not receive a letter from me about dues, it's because we don't have your name and information. So you need to call either me or Mary Beth. Or you can register here today and make sure that they have your name and everything, because membership letters have gone out. As for the brochure, I didn't know I was supposed to send anybody. Nobody let me know. So if you could send me the email address or whatever of who I'm supposed to send this to have them look at it, and now that I have information, because I hadn't finished it completely because I didn't have any email address or anything like that about Gaduck. And if I can get the rest of that information, I will finish it and send it to whoever I need to send it to. And I don't think there's anything else. Our membership has increased from last year. I don't know exactly how. I think Mary Beth has all those numbers. But we're a growing group, and that's a good thing.
Good job. Thanks, Pat.
Thank you.
Jerry has gone. Okay. So, Mary Beth, do you have a final, or not up to this point, a membership tally for us, how we're doing?
Let's see. For 2008, well, we're in the 60s, that I can tell you. I've already...
I had Mary Beth was 69.
69?
Last I heard.
Okay, that sounds right. I've already received 10 people who paid their dues for 2009. So people are getting their dues in very quickly. Actually, 11, because I just...
We just got two more.
And 12. Right. So we're already well on our way for 2009. And so.
We're still the largest affiliate in the United States.
Yeah. We keep... outdoing everybody, so let's keep that up.
You know, when I attended credentials yesterday morning, time warp. When I was at credentials yesterday morning, and Rob Turner stated that we had 57 members, I no, we don't. We have 69. But since 5 votes is all you get anyway, I didn't make a fuss over it. So, but I'm glad to hear that it is on the rise, and hopefully will continue rising. So. Very, very good. All right. Anything new on the publications front, Lee or Pat or Mary Beth?
Well, as far as Pat said, we had a meeting this summer, and we came up with ideas, and Pat LaFrance-Wolf took all our ideas and created a wonderful pamphlet, which we aren't. You know, she's working on and getting it ready. It was a beautiful pamphlet. I think you will like it. So you'll see it at the spring convention. And also I wanted to add, I thought, if I do say so, that this last edition of Forward was a really good one. And why was it good?
Because let's give Lee a hand for that one. That's great
stuff. And so it really does help. Like if you go to some sort of an access thing, or you go to a meeting, or you have some interesting experience with your dog, or I'll take it. I will even take fiction if you want to write a story. You know, because it's your magazine and it's about our dogs, and our dogs inspire us in many different ways. So,
sure.
Whatever you write, send it to me at GLEK, which is actually Gerda, Lainey, Ed, Kess. At earthlink.net. So, you can send those to me and we will put them in. 99 was the year I got Elaine, because that's when I got that. Yeah.
When This is Mary Beth. I have just a quick note, too. I found one of our old brochures, and I am going to plan to, because I do not believe that Pat has a copy of the logo and all that stuff. And so I'm going to get that scanned in now that I actually happened to cross one of those brochures by accident. So, and something else that I found, too, that our publications committee might want to look at, too, is a copy of the California law. And the one I have is from 2002. So we're going to want to maybe think about that as well. So I'll be getting that logo and stuff to Pat. And for everybody else, too, we'll probably, we have some photos in the old brochure. I was looking at that. And so I'm going to see, it would be great for us to get some new photos, only make these ones color, possibly. And so that they would be better contrast for those with low vision, and also aesthetically pleasing for the sighted people out there that we can give our brochures to. So we're in process, definitely.
Yeah. That's a question I wanted to ask. Are this brochure going to have color? Because we're going to take some pictures of people with guide dogs to put on the brochure. And you know if it needs, if it's going to be in color or black and white, because it makes a difference. Or do we have to decide that as a committee?
Anne, do we?
You know, I was sort of. Could you repeat that question, please, Pat?
The pictures of people with guide dogs that are going to go on the brochure, are these going to be in color? Is this going to be a brochure with color in it, or is it all going to be all black and white?
Well, let's go ahead and decide that now. What does everyone think?
Color.
Okay, color?
Okay.
Okay, well, I don't think we need to even vote, so let's just go ahead and say color.
Okay, thank you.
Great, thank you. Very good. All right. Dan, do you have anything in Ledge and Advocacy for us?
Got that.
Well, you saw, those of you who read forward saw the Ann's comments to the Department of Justice related to the proposed Department of Justice ruling, and we were happy with, and, you know, to be quite honest, does anybody have a copy of that letter? Okay.
I might have it in my. I'll look.
If you have it, you could read it to everybody. But it was in forward.
Well, it wasn't forward. I mean, it was a pleasure. Yeah, I don't think we need to do that.
And I don't really have any anything related to legislation. This is the end of the 08-07 legislative session, and of course, we spent a lot of time in 07 on the George Runner, Senator Runner bill that he wanted to carry for me, where we would define what the tasks of what a service animal did. And to our embarrassment, we realized that there was language in the federal law that couldn't be trumped by the state, so we couldn't really go through with that, and he had to withdraw the bill. But the good part of all that, it did bring about a lot of awareness to both Democrats and Republicans in the Capitol building about the need to change the federal law to define the tasks of a service animal. And I'm not sure that this federal regulatory change is going to do it in the way that we're going to like. Let's just keep your fingers crossed, because I don't think they've come up with their final ruling yet. That's all I have.
Right. Thank you, Dan. All right. Before moving on to our next agenda item, just occurred to me yesterday there was a pretty awesome demonstration and a whole thing about quiet cars that I didn't get to attend. So is there anyone here in the audience that did go and would maybe be able to give us a brief update and kind of their impression of the whole thing for us? Okay, so let's get you the mic then. Put you on the spot. But I just thought this is very, very cogent right now.
Dee Dee Mann here. I did attend the car session, and you know,
Can I ask who is speaking right now?
So everybody
knows.
It's Dee.
No, I knew who you were, but I wanted everybody to know. Okay.
The quiet car is going to come here and stay. So we really, really have to push for something so that we can make them put some kind of a noise on it. Because with all the buses and all the big trucks and some of our audible lights clicking and everything, you would never know that it was there. And when those cars turn on right or left, you know, before you know it, they can hit you. You cannot hear that car coming towards you, backing up, or anything. And the only thing you can do is to know if the car is on, if you're right next to it, and you can hear it a little bit. But you cannot hear it when you want to cross the street. There is just no way. So we really need to work on getting them to change some of that of the cars so we can hear it.
Madam President,
Lee,
here.
Even in addition, I think guide dogs of the desert, and I know guide dogs for the blind, they are offering quiet cars as part of the dog's traffic check. They had a Prius. Oh. GDA is too?
No. Seeing eye.
Okay. And Keith Laver happened to be the one driving the car for our check, and he did show us different things with the car. And sometimes when it's on normal, regular gas power, you can sort of hear it. But when it's on its electric power and it's just standing there idling, you don't hear it worth a damn. Yeah, you ain't going
to
hear it, honey.
And what do you do when there's a big diesel?
And when it sort of starts again, or they can put it in some sort of intermediate type situation where you might sort of hear it if the moon is in Aquarius or something, maybe. So let's face it, they are dangerous, thank God. You know, and it's really, in a way, it's kind of sad in a way, but I think it's going to change mobility as we know it. And it's not a question of when everybody's going to get if everybody's going to get dogs, it's when. Because I think, unfortunately, it will be bad enough. But I think our people who use white canes are really going to be up a creek. At least we have a set of eyeballs who will see it.
Yeah.
But if they can stop fast enough, that's the trick.
You can't even hear that
thing when you're right. No. Anyway.
Thanks, Lee. Great. Anyone else?
Yeah. I'm from Jerry. Madam President, it's Ken. Just to answer Dee Dee a little bit. The national ACB is already has legislation in Washington to work with the quiet cars so that we can try and get the quiet cars to be a little noisier. National.
Yeah, that died.
Oh, the national did too?
Yeah.
Okay, because that's what our wonderful governor was predicating his veto on, was the fact that it should be done nationally. So I think what we need to do in that case is to make sure that we try and get, I think we have a guy up there that's involved in the legislature as far as being, maybe has a good rapport with a couple of them, and perhaps we can get that bill reintroduced. I don't know what that takes, Dan. You can explain it, but the thing is, we need to do it. With what the governor said is it needed to be done nationally. I don't see why, as I keep saying, when it came to smog control and everything else, this state had specifications for smog emission, and they had to be followed. That was done when the automobile companies sent cars to California. They have to have certain standards pertaining to smog. That was done in California, so I don't understand why he had to veto that particular bill then.
The governor
his veto message was spurious at best, because the Department of Finance came out opposed. It was supposed to set up a committee within the California Energy Commission to look at ways to mitigate the safety hazards of these quiet cars. They would look at sound audible research. They were looking at, and the Energy Commission wanted Dr. Rosenblum, who spoke yesterday, and they were very hot on Dr. Rosenblum. We were skeptical because of the NFB angle with Rosenblum's audible product. Rosenblum and the NFB, and he's sort of skirted that in his presentation, manufactured basically an MP3 player that you put on your that you put on the grill. We were skeptical about that because environmental noise would impact that MP3 player, and in fact, you probably would not be able to hear it. And he admitted that, in fact, people couldn't hear it, his own product. So he sort of put down his own product. Although I knew what he was talking about, I'm not sure everybody else knew that it was another scheme for NFB to support so they could sell yet another product. And but the problem with the federal National Traffic Safety Administration handling this research is what we've seen come out of their studies so far is they're talking about the installation of rumble strips in every intersection, handheld devices. And I pointed this out in the state legislature. I said it's very impractical to have a handheld device when most blind people either have a hand on their white cane or a hand on their dog. And if they have a handheld device in their hand, they're not going to be able to reach out and look for obstacles or, whatever, overhangs or whatever you need to do to check out your environment. The seeking another bill, I did like his idea about if we come back with a bill, to have a bill that would go into require the DMV and the California Highway Patrol to actually start doing reporting on accidents related to pedestrians and these quiet cars. And right now there's no such requirement. So I would think that would have a better chance of passing, because that's a bill that relates to everybody and not just blind people. And as he pointed out, this isn't a problem for the blind, it's a problem for everybody, because you suddenly have a silent vehicle. And you don't see that with transit companies. They would never be allowed to put out a totally quiet vehicle, bus. But it's for some reason okay to produce a car that's totally quiet. I find that really interesting. Thank you.
As someone who's almost been hit twice by one of those little cars, and standing out there yesterday and watching Bob drive this car, what struck me with what Bob said was, you really, really, those of us who use guide dogs, and mine wasn't trained with the quiet car. Peter Riley trained her, and that was enough, because she backed up when she saw Bob coming up with the car. So the two times that I've almost been hit, once was with Keith, and if Maiden had really stepped off that curve when I gave her that forward command, both of us would have gotten hit, because I didn't hear the car coming up on my left at all. And crossing a driveway, the same thing. If Maiden hadn't stopped and backed up, we'd have gotten hit. So it's up to us, and it's true. We can't expect our dogs to do everything, but we really, really, really have to follow these dogs and listen to what these dogs are telling us. Because even though Maiden has never been trained with the quiet car, she saw a car pull up and she backed up. So as what Bob said, I'm really, really take to heart what Bob said yesterday. Pay attention to what your dog is doing when you're out there walking those streets, because you can't hear it. And on one street where we live, Valley Boulevard, please, you can't hear yourself sneeze.
All right, we'll take one more. Anyone else have a...
Okay, just a quick... I wanted to fill in a couple of gaps. We've heard over and over you know, that people say you can't really hear it, you can't really hear it. But I wanted to illustrate something, just a little a scenario about how the demonstration was conducted. Bob Wendler, as you know, did the demonstration, and what they did was to have us all in a line close toward the, to, you know, off the curb, so it left a clear path of travel. And he moved from the line's left to its right. So what he did was, first he had the car in idle, way on the left. Nobody could hear it. And he did a couple of demonstrations that, you know, where he would pass the entire line. What was really dramatic for me was there was a point, nobody could hear it as he passed. He spoke when he was at the left of the line, and a couple of seconds later he spoke again way at the right, and nobody reacted at all. He had passed the entire line, and nobody indicated they had heard the car. That's how quiet it is. The other thing I wanted to point out is there is a backup sound. However, Bob was saying that the backup noise, the beep, is inside the car. Yeah, it's there to alert the driver that he's backing up, and he or she should look. And he demonstrated that also. He demonstrated that, and very few of us could hear that. The final thing that was really dramatic was he did a demonstration where he went again from our left to our right. He held his hand on the horn, and we could hear the horn with the Doppler sound as it would fade past, but that was all we heard. And that was with the car pretty accelerated. So when people say, you know, you can't hear it, you won't be able to hear it even if it's totally quiet. There's just no sound at all. If you're lucky, you may hear tire sounds, but at that point the car is accelerated. You're going to have you're going to have serious damage.
Okay, questions?
This is Ed Crespin. I was just wondering, when we were smaller, remember we used to put, for those who could ride bicycles, put little cards on the bicycles. Why can't they do something with the tires? I mean, but I'm not sure, you know, if it could be loud enough or something like that. Of course, when it stops, you can't hear it, though. That's a problem, yeah. But I don't know.
I'm not worried about it being stopped. I want to hear when it's coming.
Yeah.
Any other questions, comments?
Yes.
One more.
Yeah, this is Vivian. What I'm concerned about is we're going to step off the curb, and we're in the midst of walking. Now, my dog does a, you know, 1-2 step, and then she's gearing up to go across a busy signal pretty quick. And I'm concerned about, okay, if we're doing that, then we have less time even to react to the car that's making the right-hand turn. I'm concerned about those. Okay, let's just say the car is right there for the moment. I'm making a right, because sometimes you can hear just before they turn, make a right through regular cars. So I'm concerned about that part as well. I was wondering. So I'm just wondering, how can we be, I mean, I guess, you know, it's not a matter of being taught. It's just all about the cars, isn't it?
That's how you get rid of SSI.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Go ahead, Dan.
One more question.
The question I have is, a couple of things. I think, number one, we should work to get rid of right on reds. I think that is our big nemesis, number one. And number two, when people get those cars, the thing that Bob was talking about was how on the back of the visor, it has all this information on it, and they said that no matter how they tried, they can't get it off. You know, a couple sighted people said that. And so I think they should add the thing, you know, about the quiet car. Remember the pedestrian who cannot hear your car. So that's my input. It really is pretty scary, because the other thing is the driveways. You know, we talk about intersections, but how many of us have been surprised by driveways?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah, motorcycles, normal cars, you know, coming out of a driveway. I mean, it's I've had some couple of close calls myself. So, okay, we have time for one more, and then we're going to move on.
And one more gap I'll point out that wasn't mentioned is that the car will be in the energy saving mode, will be basically electric until it reaches 20 miles an hour. Then the combustion engine kicks in. And one of the things that really shocked me is I did not hear the car, and I said, and I had somebody bring me up to the front of the car, and I gradually came closer and closer, and I could not hear anything until I was about a half a foot. My ear was about 6 inches from the grill, and then what I heard was a, and that must have been the fan belt, I guess. But that's all I heard. Thanks.
All right. Hey, I want to really thank everyone who went and participated in that yesterday. Give yourselves a big, big hand. I do. All right. Now the best part of the morning's entertainment. Do we have a nominating committee report?
Oh, is that me again?
That's you again, or Lee, or, well, Debbie, who isn't here.
Okay. Basically, we opted to keep the current state of... Hello? Okay. We have a vice president, secretary... I mean treasurer. I'm sorry, treasurer. I was trying to get out of it. Treasurer and one board position. And the current slate of officers that we chose are the current slate of officers in that position. Jerry Arakawa, Debbie Flowers for board. I mean for board. And
no. That's...
I'm sorry, not Debbie. It's you. It's
Pam
Metz.
And Mary Beth.
And Mary Beth for treasurer. And then people can run from the floor against these people if they want to.
And we also have the two delegate positions for the state.
But we don't usually nominate.
That we don't do for... Yeah, we just do those from the floor, so... But I'm just point of clarification.
What's your nomination? Okay,
well... Right. Without further ado, we will proceed with the nomination of vice president. So the committee recommends Jerry Arakawa. So are there any other nominations? Going twice, are there any other nominations? One more time, are there any other nominations? All right. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Oh, cool, lots of them. Okay, move and second that Jerry Arakawa be nominated by acclamation. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? I heard one opposition in the peanut gallery to my left.
Well, clearly I didn't distribute enough checks around, but thank you. Thank you very much for your vote of confidence.
Yeah, he's trying to give me the $10 bill again.
Not good. He
keeps trying to get me to... All right. Congratulations, Jerry. You want to say anything else?
Thank you very much. I all kidding aside, I'm very humbled and honored by your vote of confidence, and you'll get the best I have. It's a tremendous organization, and it's growing all the time, and thank all of you.
Bravo.
All right. All right. Next up, our nominating committee recommended Mary Beth Randall for treasurer. Are there any other nominations? Second, are there any other nominations? And one last time, any other nominations?
Move now, please.
All right, we have a motion. Second, nominations be closed and Mary Beth be elected by acclamation. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Very good. Mary Beth, you have anything to say?
Thank you. I will endeavor to keep doing a good job. And I would love to see our treasury improve even more. I have a goal in my mind, but I don't dare say it out loud because that might jinx it or something. But we will endeavor to continue to improve our treasury, and maybe we can think up some good stuff that we can do with it, too.
Yay!
Okay. Okie dokie. Last but not least in our slate, our nominating committee recommends once again electing Pam Metz, who has been serving the one-year position left over with the resignation of one of our board members last year. So this will be a full two-year position. So with that, are there any other nominations? Once again, any other nominations? Number three, are there any other nominations?
Move nominations be closed. And,
okay, we have a move and second. The nominations be closed and Pam Metz be elected by acclamation. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. There's the peanut gallery again. Boy, that peanut gallery on my left. We had two oppositions, but too bad, you're overruled. All right. Would you like to say words there, Pam?
Yeah, I have one thing to say. I actually am enjoying myself. I went to the National, and I am so sorry I didn't get to the board meeting. I couldn't find it. But I had a good time representing GDUC at the convention. It was going to the different events that GDUI had put on, and the cruise was great. So I did have the cruise was great, even though somebody did fall in the water. But it was a great cruise. Yeah, and Bob Windler rescued him. And he was mad because his cell phone was wet. But and he got his Eddie Bauer t-shirt all wet. But we had a good time, and I'm really going to try and do more. And call me when the board calls. Don't email me.
No, you got it. I promise. You know, I'll tell you what. This is Mary Beth. I also had, of course, been at the convention. And even though poor Pam missed the board meeting, in some ways she's probably fortunate.
Yeah.
Let's just say in as polite of terms as possible that it was a very interesting board meeting. So... All righty. Okay, our final positions, which for some reason we historically have never done as a part of the slate. This will be, can we have it quiet, please?
Thank you.
They're filling out membership.
Oh, okay. I just wanted it not to be too. Okay. Next, we have our delegates, which will be serving the state conventions next spring and next fall. So for 2009, two delegates and alternate. I mean, delegate and alternate. So when it is April... middle of April. Is it early April? I thought it was... Oh, it's early April. Well, I'm hearing two different things. We'll as soon as we get the info, we can... Oh, it's in SACTO again? It's in SACTO again. I'll make sure that everyone gets that information ASAP. I will send it around on... Hopefully by then everyone will be subscribed to GDUCL, so I will put it on the list.
And in forward.
The fall one I know is October 29th
through
November 1st.
Right,
yes.
So Halloween weekend.
In Fresno.
Very apropos.
I think it's really important that we elect a delegate who is actually going to attend the, and I'm not casting aspersions on anybody, but it seems to be a typical problem that we've had over the last two or three, 4 years, where the delegate has been very inexperienced and has not shown up to credentials. And I think that it's fine for the alternate delegate maybe to get some training and to be new, but I would encourage this organization, really, when you have your main delegate, they should be responsible and they should show up to meetings. Thank you.
Excelente. All right. So... A
Okay, I will answer that. We used to do what all chapters do, and some affiliates may still do, I don't know, but at one time we had the delegate do a full convention report and, you know, go to as many of the general sessions and things, and, you know, banquet and everything, and give reports of all of those things. And for that, we used to pay them a stipend of, well, it would depend on where the convention was held at the time, whether it required airfare or not, whatever. And then we decided at some point that why reinvent the wheel? The chapters all do that. So the delegate now only, their only responsibility is to first thing go to credentials, the credentials committee on Friday morning, which usually at 8 o'clock, which is hard enough. That's probably the hardest thing right there, is to get up and go to credentials at 8 o'clock. And then the second thing was to be at general session Friday night to vote, to be the one that represented the affiliate in voting, like we did last night. If you were there, you heard the procedure. And also Sunday morning at the business meeting for voting on resolutions. So either if one of the delegates had to leave on a flight early or something like that, then the alternate that's something that the delegate and alternate would arrange who was going to attend what. So now that's really all we ask of them. And so now we don't actually offer a monetary stipend, but I've been thinking off and on, and this is something I may bring up at the next convention, next GDUC meeting, is maybe possibly giving our delegates the GDUC lunch. I think that would be kind of nice. But anyway, that's something we can discuss later. So anyway, without further ado, are there any nominations for delegate?
Yes, I would like to nominate Pat LaFrance.
Madam President, I nominate Ann Kaiser.
You have to ask these guys if they want to accept a nomination.
Do you accept the?
I do. Does Pat accept? Pat, do you accept?
Pat, do you accept the okay, great.
Madam President, as a point of information, just to make sure, so both of you know, and remember that if you're a delegate or alternate of another chapter or anything else, you can't be a
delegate. I am not.
Okay, I'm just saying both.
I can't speak for Pat, but I am not.
Well, that's, I just wanted to remind you.
Okay. So this is the second round. Final time. Are there any other nominations?
Move that nominations be closed.
Second.
Very good. We have a move and a second. So we have on tap here Pat LaFrance Wolf and Ann Kaiser. So I will let... I guess how are we going to do this? I'll let someone else run that one. And we need a... can't...
All right. Can Pat Whitehead? Can you act as a counter for us? Okay.
Yeah, we can do
Very
that.
Good.
Do
Thank
we want,
you.
Do we want speakers or do we need all that?
No. I don't. Does anyone want? And we'll go with the pleasure of the body. Does anyone want speakers for both of these fine nominees?
No.
Okay. We know these people for 100 years, so.
Almost.
Yeah. Well, there goes my vote. And gee, I was gonna. Well, okay. Well, we'll do it. Yes, right. I already spent it.
Well, that's who started that one. That's who's $10 that wasn't.
Yeah. Okay. We'll do this in alphabetical order. And Pat Whitehead, are you ready?
Yeah, we're ready.
Okay. All right. All of those in favor of Ann Kaiser for delegate, please raise your hand.
Okay, keep your hands up, please.
David and I are checking to see if we get the same number.
Yeah, please don't announce the final, of course. Okay, great. All those who would like to elect Pat LaFrance Wolf as a delegate, please raise your hand.
Okay.
Okay. And
Kaiser.
Okay. Anyone want to hear the totals? Right. Very good. Well, congratulations, Anne.
Thank you.
Oh, no, I have to get up and go to Grand Angel. Thank you very much. I will I'll use my best judgment and try to make the best decisions for GDUC. Thank you.
Alternate.
So, now, alternate delegate.
Madam President. I nominate Pat LaFrance Wolf.
Second.
Okay, Pat LaFrance Wolf. Are there any other nominations? Going twice. Are there any other nominations? And three times, are there? And okay, and anyway, Pat LaFrance Wolf is elected by acclamation. Thank you. Marvelous, marvelous. All right, it is now 10 o'clock. Or getting on there. Let me see. What time is that? Boy, we actually have just about wrapped up our business meeting, probably in the most timely manner I can remember in a long time. Let's give ourselves a big hand. I will ask, however, is there any old business anyone has? Okay, Pam, you want to go first? Okay, Tony.
I have a question.
Okay, we have an announcement, and we have Pam, and we have a question. So we'll give it to Tony first. Get a microphone.
I've got it. Thank you very much. This is Tony Candela from DOR and the representative to the Guide Dog Board. And I just wanted to make this announcement now before it gets away from me, because you're going to have a really great speaker, and I don't want to follow that great speaker. The Guide Dog Board, in consort with a number of different organizations, GDUC being one of the more important ones, will be hosting Guide Dog Day 2008 this year. It will be at the Westin LAX Hotel, so that probably is not too far from where we are right now, maybe even next door for all I know, and it's on Tuesday, November 18, and we've already begun sending out publicity information, and we'll be sending out more. It's also on the Guide Dog Board website, guidedogs.ca.gov, I think is our new website. It's very easy website. And the crux of this year's Guide Dog Day, it's part of the Department of Consumer Affairs major event, and the Guide Dog Board is under the Department of Consumer Affairs. So the crux is the working of partners with each other to secure our future. That's not the exact title, but that's the basic theme of it. And it starts at 9:00 in the morning, Tuesday, November 18, and goes until 4:00. And then right after that will be the regular fall meeting of the Guide Dog Board. What I wanted to let you know is very much in concert with what we discussed last year when I was here with you. We are going to be pursuing a number of the key issues surrounding the guide dog industry, as I call it. The major one being the emerging and burgeoning service animal industry and how that affects guide dogs and the guide dog industry. And we've already nailed for one of our key panels, we've nailed Corey Hudson from K9 Companions and also another knowledgeable speaker. Some of you may know this guy, Nellie Emerson, put me in touch with him, Mr. Rick Boggs. Our keynoter is Ariel Gilbert, who I know is here in the room. And we'll have representatives from all of the guide dog schools giving updates. I'll give a little update on what the guide dog board is doing. I'm not going to bore you with that right now. We did support that legislation for the quiet cars. We're just as disappointed as anybody else what happened with that. I want to one last thing is to say I am enjoying our working relationship with GDUC and hope that we can really ramp that up even more. And I'm thinking we're going to make a meeting, Ann, with you, and we're going to talk about some mutual support on a couple of things I heard being discussed today. So we'll get back in touch with you about that. So Guide Dog Day on Tuesday, November 18, Weston LAX, 9 o'clock to 4 o'clock. Look out for the publicity material. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tony.
Question?
Tony, is that the date that I'm going to be speaking on a panel? Do you know?
I know that's the one you're sending me to.
Is that the one you're going? Okay, very good. Excellent. I just wanted to clarify that.
Yeah, I wanted to find out who's planning going to attend. Very good.
And I hope that a lot of Southern California people can get there.
Pat?
Yes.
Who had the question?
Yeah. If you're going to have the actual meeting at 4 o'clock, how long will that last? We got to figure out about our access rides coming home.
We should go a couple hours.
Oh. Yeah, I'd plan for 2.5 hours.
Yeah, the guide dog board meeting, which will follow immediately the day, usually lasts about 2 hours. So figure around 6 o'clock we'll be ending.
Okay, thank you.
That's it. Mary Beth?
Did everybody receive a drawing ticket for door prizes?
No.
Okay. Well, then if we could get the puppy raisers to make sure that before you all leave, get a ticket for the door prizes.
After membership.
Okay. And make sure all of us nice people up here get one, too, please.
Do we have any other business or announcements? All right. Hearing none, I think we can wrap this up. Do I hear a motion to adjourn?
Move that we adjourn.
Very good. All right. I heard a move and second to adjourn. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right. Thank you, everyone. This is the wrap-up of our fall business meeting. Good job, everyone. Thank you very much. All right. I'm going to introduce the person who is going to make the introduction of our guest speaker, since it's through her that we're privileged enough to have him come speak to us this morning. So with that, I'll hand it over to Pat LaFrance-Wolf to introduce our guest speaker. Take it away, Pat. Who has the...
All right. Hello. Good morning, everybody, again. I would like to introduce Dr. Craig Mohagan. I'm not sure I got his name right. I never saw a name with so many G's and H's in it. Maybe he could correct me. But he is a veterinary doctor who was graduated from Mississippi State University Veterinary School. He graduated, you know, with honors and with a number of honors for different projects he did while in school. He's presently working at Foothill Veterinary Clinic in Pasadena. They're a wonderful clinic. They give free service to all guide dogs, all service animals. And that means everything, medicine, most tests. You have to pay for a few tests. But it's a wonderful veterinary clinic. I've been going there for a number of years, and Dr. Craig is one of their newest members there, and I'm very glad to show him. He's going to be showing a PowerPoint presentation, but I explained to him how important it was to do descriptions, so he's going to do that. So we'll be hearing things like sore, red, lumpy, you know, things like that, talking about skin allergies and diseases and the lumps and bumps that many of our dogs get, particularly as they age. Dr. Craig?
My name's Craig Mohagig. I am a veterinarian, and as Pat said, her dog Shannon comes to us quite often, so it's been a pleasure getting to know her, and I'm here because of her. I think a veterinarian's most important duty is to protect the human-animal bond through ensuring animal health. and there are few individuals or groups which rely on their animals as much as you all do. So it's our job to make sure that your animal is healthy and that happy, and that that can help you as well. So the point of this presentation is to talk about common skin diseases. Unfortunately, Labradors and Goldens are pretty predisposed to these conditions. So I'm going to describe some of the skin diseases in hopes that it may help you identify them. And as with any type of disease, early identification usually is better for a prognosis and should return them to a working condition sooner. Okay. So dermatological problems or skin diseases describes a major category of illnesses that can be caused by a number of skin diseases. Many skin diseases appear similar and may require extensive testing to determine specifically which one they are. Many breeds are predisposed to skin diseases, and unfortunately, many of these breeds are wonderful working animals, specifically Labrador Retrievers and Golden Retrievers. Some general information. The skin is the largest organ on the body. It accounts for about 12% of the adult body weight, and it's a dynamic organ that's constantly changing. It's critical to survival for any living organism. Disruption of that normal balance can cause disease. There's normal resident bacteria and yeast that can multiply and cause disease. And skin diseases comprise pretty much 25 to 75% of the veterinary caseload in small animal medicine. So it's a big deal. There are some terms that I'm going to use to describe the skin diseases. Now, I tried to make it very user-friendly, so work with me here. If it's not, I apologize. There are primary lesions and secondary lesions. A primary lesion is the initial eruption as a direct result of the underlying disease, and these may disappear quickly and leave behind secondary lesions. So there are important to identify these lesions to help us come to a diagnosis. The first one are called macules or patches, which is just an abnormal coloration of the skin. A macule is a small one, a patch is a bigger one, essentially. Discoloration can be red if the wound is bleeding, or underneath the skin, some hemorrhage under the skin. It can be darker from an increase in melanin, or lighter from a decrease in melanin. Melanin is the pigment in the skin, I should say, sorry. Another one is papules and patches, which are solid elevations of the skin. They're often red and hot to the touch. A papule is a circular, solid elevation of the skin, up to 1 centimeter, and a plaque are larger, flatter, kind of a cluster of papules stuck together. A pustule is a small fluid-filled elevation, usually indicates infection, and these tend to rupture, and they're very common, found in a lot of skin conditions. A vesicle and a bulla are essentially a big blister. It's an elevation of skin filled with fluid, and they're fragile, and they often rupture. Vesicles are smaller, bullas are a little bit bigger, and these usually indicate an autoimmune disease. A wheal is like a hive. It's a flat top elevation of the skin caused by excessive fluid in the skin. And these are very transient, only lasting a few minutes to hours. And they are very indicative of an allergy. A nodule is like a lump. It's an elevation of the skin bigger than 1 centimeter that extends into the deeper layers of the skin. This is caused by inflammation and sometimes cancerous cells. Alopecia is a loss of hair. It can be either complete, where the entire length of hair is lost, or traumatic, where the dog is chewing the hair and they'll just have what appears like stubble. Complete implies an endocrine disease or inflammation of the hair shaft, and traumatic suggests itchy skin disease. Scale is like dandruff. It's an accumulation of dry fragments of skin, common with any chronic inflammatory condition, allergies, or skin infection. A crust is like a big scab of dried pus, cells, or scale on the surface of the skin, again, imply some type of chronic dry skin condition. Calmido is like a blackhead, essentially, a plug of wax and dirt in the hair. Some of these other secondary lesions, one's called an epidermal collarette, which is essentially after a blister ruptures, it's a hot circular portion of the air, portion of the skin, often flaky and dry to the touch. A scar is a hard tissue that replaces damaged skin. It's the end stage of severe skin disease or trauma. And scars will contract over time, but they will not regrow hair. A lot of people think that they will, but they won't. A scratch or excoriation is like a scratch, the removal of the top layer of skin from excessive scratching, biting, or rubbing, indicates self-trauma. And a callus is essentially a pressure sore, a rough, thick, hairless portion of skin, usually over the pressure points such as the elbows or knees. So now that we've gone over the painful part of this presentation, let's start talking about some more. Let's call lesion distribution. So where the lesions arise on the dog helps us determine or gives us clues of which type of skin disease we are working with. An allergy, essentially, the immune system encounters a disease. It produces antibodies. Initially, there is not enough antibodies for protection. The antibodies that eventually form neutralize the offending agent, and the animal recovers. And now it's sensitized this immune system, so it's ready to produce large amounts of antibodies the next time it encounters the same agent. So when a pollen particle or some other allergen enters the body produces similar an antibody response. And the antibodies attach to this allergen and neutralize it in a process called sensitization. So without this sensitization, there is no allergies. So next time your pet encounters these pollen particles, the immune system produces a lot of antibodies rapidly. Antibodies attach and circulate throughout the bloodstream, causing inflammation through the activation of histamine. Flea allergies is the most common canine allergic skin disorder. It can be resolved by preventing the dog from being bitten by a flea, but this problem can occur with a single flea bite. So dogs that have flea allergic dermatitis are hypersensitive to the flea's saliva passed into the dog's skin when bitten. And it will cause them to have itching, crusts, and hair loss, particularly on their lower back and tail base. When it gets severe, it can extend to their thighs and abdomen, and it can cause the skin to feel irregular and thick. Atopic dermatitis is an allergic inhalant dermatitis. Commonly, it's a hereditary and itchy skin disease, the second most common skin allergy, and 10% of dogs are affected with this. It's once that immune system is ramped up, essentially, it's from repeated exposure to these dust mites and pollens. It'll cause the dogs to scratch their face, ears, chew their feet, armpits, and groin area. The skin becomes very hot and thick, and it's very common in golden retrievers. There is a clinical study designed to screen potential guide dogs. And the paper was called Prediction of Future Development of Canine Atopic Dermatitis Based on Examination of Clinical History. So they looked at the medical records of 30 dogs from the Guide Dogs for the Blind Association, and they found that atopic dogs showed signs of skin disease, 60% of them by the time that they were 7 months old, and 100% of them by the time they were 11 months old. So the paper concluded that if these dogs have more than 4 episodes of this atopy or skin allergies by 15 months old, they were at an increased risk for developing atopic dermatitis. So what does that mean? Obviously, training of the service dogs is very expensive. Atopic dermatitis can be managed medically, but it cannot be cured. The problem with medical management of atopic dermatitis in working dogs, it's very time-consuming. The medication is expensive, and some of these medications may impair the animal's ability to work. So the study suggests these animals should be excluded from training, obviously, once a definitive diagnosis of atopic dermatitis has been made by your veterinarian. Bacterial skin diseases, essentially, it's called pyoderma, which means pus in the skin. That's the second most common skin disease. And dogs are uniquely predisposed to skin disease because they have thinner skin than other animals, and they have a different skin pH. And a break in the skin can allow that normal resident bacteria to cause disease. So what would a bacterial skin disease appear as? It would have a bad odor. The dog would be itchy, and it would feel hot to the touch. It commonly occurs on the body, trunk, from the head, and their extremities, legs and arms. Food allergy is also another big one. It happens on dogs between 2 months to 14 years of age. Labrador retrievers are predisposed. The most common allergies are the protein source in the food, such as beef, chicken, eggs, corn, wheat, soy, and milk. It causes an inflammation in the ear canal, general itchy conditions, and some of these conditions kind of appear similar. So this one may look like flea allergy and atopy. But there are special diets that we can give the pet, and they will totally be cured from that. So that's one that's pretty easy to manage. Fungal skin diseases are also very common. Malassezia is a normal skin yeast, and the disease is caused when this normal resident overgrows or the animal becomes hypersensitive to it. Again, Goldens and Lab retrievers are predisposed. Commonly causes ear infections. Inflammation of the ear canal changes the humidity in the ear, the temperature, and decreases ventilation, allowing normal residents like the yeast to replicate and cause disease. The yeast infection in the ear has a very distinct smell of old bread.
Oh, yeah.
So if you start smelling old bread in your dog's ears, time to come see a veterinarian. And the dog will shake their head and scratch their ears, and they can sometimes traumatize their ears, and once this gets severe enough, it can cause damage to the nerves in their ears, so they may have a head tilt or walk abnormally. Everybody probably knows about hot spots. It's a rapidly progressive bacterial skin condition that occurs secondary to self-inflicted trauma. So it's common in hot and humid season and in thick-coated dogs. The lesions are usually itchy, and they tend to drain. They're very hot, and it's a deep excoriation or an erosion. It's commonly caused. Flea allergy causes it most common, or atopy. Food allergies or anal sac disease can also cause hot spots. And those are pretty easy to treat once we get to them. You just need to clean them up a little bit, and dogs do pretty well with that. Anal gland impaction. The anal gland disease is the most common. Anal sac disease is the most common disease entity of the anal region in dogs. And it's caused by a failure of the sac to express during defecation, or poor muscle tone in obese dogs can lead to retention of the contents in that sac. And this may predispose the dog to bacterial overgrowth, infection, or inflammation. Signs are related to pain and discomfort associated with sitting. There's the classic scooting, licking, biting at the anal area, and painful defecation with straining. So, in conclusion, it's been a pleasure to speak with all of you today. I hope that I've made this presentation interesting and informative with not too much technical info. The skin diseases are a very common condition of dogs, and quick resolution of these conditions requires the owner to be able to recognize and identify the signs early. Many skin diseases appear similarly, but I hope I have helped to make you more familiar with them. The animals you work with are a critical component to your life, and keeping them healthy improves the quality of both the animals and your life. If there's any doubt, please ask your veterinarian or me for clarification. So I'll take any questions now.
I have a question. My name is Perry Wolf. For home use, what do you suggest if we find a hot spot? What should we do immediately?
Well, the most important
My voice tends to carry.
Okay. The most important thing for a hotspot is to get the hair off of the wound so that it can dry on its own. Now, if you're able to use some clippers and shave that area and get it to dry on its own, that's good. You can put a very mild astringent on there, something that'll dry it out. No, like maybe hydrogen peroxide.
Yeah, that's probably the best.
And that's something you can do at home. The problem is, if it goes on, it leads to a secondary bacterial infection, and then they need antibiotics. So I would say if you can get it, I've treated my own dogs at home before I was a veterinarian because it's very common. So if you can get it under control within a couple days, fine. If it's still there, you need to see a vet and have them reevaluate it.
Yeah, you mentioned about flea allergy. Are you noticing that maybe the like Advantage or Frontline or some of the products are sort of starting to maybe not be quite as effective as they were, and maybe where people didn't need to maybe fumigate or use some other flea control products, maybe now they're needing to start again? Because I noticed that happened to me this year.
Okay, some flea products are designed to kill the flea after it has bitten the dog. So it resides in the skin, the agent that kills the flea. Well, unfortunately, the flea bites the dog, the saliva goes into the skin, causes flea allergies. So initially, flea products are not going to prevent that disease, but as the flea population decreases, it shouldn't be a problem. The flea products that we have nowadays are essentially state-of-the-art. They're very, very good. You can also treat the environment as well. Some of those products are not as safe. The ones, the topicals that we applied on the dog's skin is extremely safe. You know, some of the other agents, you can vacuum your house frequently, get some of the fleas out of the carpet. You can do treatments if it's excessive. I think the key is preventing the fleas from replicating, getting them off your dog, and then secondarily you can treat the environment as well. So I hope that answers your question.
Hi, I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about fatty tumors in older dogs, as well as we've seen a lot of cancer in older dogs, and I'm wondering if there's been any research as to why that happens.
Okay, cancer is the number one cause of death in dogs. And unfortunately, the way that chemotherapy and cancer treatment in animals is much different than it is in people. So it's designed in animals just to palliate or just to get kind of blunt those responses that they have to it. Where in people, you know, we put people through hell when they're on chemotherapy in hopes to cure it. Well, you can't do that to an animal, because you can tell a person that you're going to feel really bad with this therapy and then hopefully you're going to be over it. Well, you can't tell that to your dog. And if you put your dog through that, a lot of times they'll just, you know, they'll succumb to it and they won't survive. As far as fatty tumors go, fatty tumors are just an abnormal collection of fat. They're usually benign. Sometimes they can be locally invasive, which means that the tumor itself gets in the way of normal organs and then it needs to come out. If you feel a lump or bump on your dog, it's a good idea to have it checked out by a veterinarian, because the appearance itself, even to me, I can't tell the difference between just a benign fatty tumor and a cancerous tumor. You have to actually go in there and remove some cells and look at it under a microscope to make a diagnosis. So, you know, I suggest that you guys feel your dogs over very frequently. And if you feel a lump or bump and you've noticed that it's getting bigger, it's a good idea to have it checked out by a veterinarian.
Why do they get those?
Why do they get fatty deposits?
Yeah.
I don't know. People get them, too. I think it's just an abnormal collection of fat, so I don't really know why they get them.
Another
but it's normal. It's a normal thing that happens.
Hi, doctor. Can you talk to us a little bit about ear maintenance, whether a dog is prone to ear allergies or not. You know, I've heard a lot of different opinions from vets about using Otocleanse or Otocong on a regular basis, or whether it's not necessary. If you feel it is, how often should we do it?
Well, I think the biggest problem with the ears in dogs is, you know, heat. It's a change in the normal conditions in the ear. And obviously there's always going to be, just like on our skin, there's bacteria and yeast. There's always going to be bacteria and yeast in there that you're never going to be able to get rid of. The best thing to do is, you know, keep your dog's ears clean and dry. It's pretty common when people let their dogs go swimming that they develop ear conditions. Also, if you're worried about a dog or your dog has predisposed to ear conditions, you can use just a dilute flush of vinegar, and it's acetic acid essentially, and that kills the yeast. So the yeast is the biggest problem in the ear. I think if you get a 2% acetic acid solution, which is, I think your commercial vinegar is about 10%, so if you dilute that down about 5 times, it's a pretty decent ear flush.
Okay.
That you can use. And but, you know, this is, ear conditions can become very serious. They can get into the nerves. There's 3 major nerves that run through the ear that cause what they call vestibular disease, which kind of means that you lose your balance. You don't, it's kind of like if you've been spinning around too fast, and it's a very, very serious condition. So there again, once it gets bad, you need to make sure that you have a veterinarian on board to make sure that you guys are treating the ear properly.
I have a question about shampoos and grooming products. In order to promote continuing to have healthy skin on your dog, what types of shampoos and grooming products are recommended, and which ones are definitely to be avoided?
Well, you're not going to know which products to use unless you've used it before and the animal has a reaction to it. There's one called EpiSoothe, which is a very friendly product. I think people tend to bathe their dogs more than they should. It's my opinion that if you bathe your dog more than about 4 times a year, you're rinsing off the natural oils that hydrate the skin, and that can lead to dry skin conditions. A lot of people have their dogs in the house a lot, and I understand that they want them to smell clean. So there's very gentle cleaning agents like that EpiSoothe that I talked about. You can even just rinse them with water, and then that's totally fine as well, just to get the dirt off. I would use a veterinary-specific product. Baby shampoo would probably be okay, but I'm not familiar with using it on animals. And then, like you were saying, you can brush the dog frequently is probably the best way to go to get that dirt out of there. And brushing spreads the natural oils throughout the skin and hair coat. And sometimes people supplement the animals with fish oil, and that can hydrate the skin as well. So if they have any type of dry skin problems, you want to use some type of oil to hydrate the skin. Avocados are okay in moderation. They're very fatty, so you don't want to get your dog overweight. Yeah, so just like with people.
I have a question going back to the thing with the flea products. In our area, we're starting to have a trend where the vets are recommending that we increase the time that we give them. It used to be where they were saying once a month. The vets are now actually recommending that we go as few as 2 weeks because of fleas possibly becoming more immune to the flea stuff. What are you recommending down here in this area, and how will that affect the dog's ability to, you know, react? you know, in case of, you know, some sort of allergic reaction to the different flea products.
Any medication has a specific label, and you have to, as a veterinarian, you have to go with what the product label says. And I'm not familiar with any change in the free product labeling. So the free product says apply every 30 days. That's what I recommend. If a veterinarian chooses to use it more often, then they're using it at off-label usage, and I don't recommend that. I think environmental control is probably the best way to go. So make sure that you're very religious about applying the free flea product every 30 days. Most of these products last 6 weeks rather than 4 weeks. And so you have a, you know, people tend to miss a week, or, is it the beginning of the month or is it the middle of the month? And so they really actually last longer than 30 days. So I think, especially with the cost of flea products, every 2 weeks is excessive.
You mentioned protein could be a factor in certain allergies, like you mentioned beef and chicken. And I'm wondering if in some of these feeds that you see today, you see high percentages of crude protein, if that could be the higher percentage could be a factor in allergies and other organ problems in the dog, like kidney disease and so forth.
Well, when protein breaks down, it makes urea, which is a waste product. So the more protein you have, the harder your kidneys have to work to get rid of that byproduct. So you do not want a too high of a protein content. But, you know, your commercial pet foods and the ones you buy anywhere, they have a reasonable amount of protein in there. I don't think that they have an excessive amount.
Okay, just to further, my wife is giving her dog a feed that has 32% protein. What I was told by a vet at the guide dog school is not to go over 26%. So there are some feeds out there, not so much the commercial variety in the supermarket, but some of these premium dog foods have 32%, some are 40%. Would you say that those are excessive?
Well, it depends on a growing dog needs a higher percentage of protein, more like 25 to 30%. A dog that works a lot could use a higher bit of protein. An older dog over 8 years old, I think, needs less than 20% protein, more like 15%, because they just don't burn it off, and extra protein turns into calories, and that's not what we want. It's not good for our pets. I think that, like you were asking about the allergies, once they've been exposed to these protein sources, it's usually the most common in the foods, which is the beef and the chicken, like we spoke about. And once they're exposed to those, you have to change the protein source. So they've come up with these essential novel protein sources that trick the immune system, so the immune system doesn't recognize them anymore. And that's how those types of food work. But specifically, the protein, high content of protein in a healthy dog is not going to be that harmful. It's going to make the kidneys work a little bit harder over time. That might be a problem. But the big problem is it's going to make them gain weight if they're not burning it off.
I have a question, Dr. Craig.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. A few years ago at one of our spring conventions, we had a holistic vet from Davis, you know, Davis is, but anyway.
Oh, yeah.
And she was very, very strong on promoting the what they call the raw diet. And apparently that even exists in a packaged form, but she was definitely a dog that is not on this totally natural, you know, raw meat diet, just doesn't have the same health, doesn't have the same kind of muscle tone. And it was kind of ironic because she was saying how beautiful my dog was. I just received this dog I have down here, Daytona, and she's like, wow, that is a beautiful lab. I know. And then, you know, she was even going, what a beautiful, you know, nice muscles. And then when I told her she was not on the, you know, she was eating like Yukonuba or something, and then she kind of, but I just was, that's a kind of making a short story long, but I guess my question is that kind of a fad thing, or what do you think about the raw diet or the barf diet or whatever they call those things?
Essentially, I don't believe in that. I can tell you why. a veterinarian is a scientist. So if I'm going to make a recommendation to you about what your pet should eat, it needs to be backed up by proof, meaning, you know, science has gone there. They've done trials on the dogs. They've given some dogs that raw diet and some dogs a regular diet, and they've proven that the dog does better on the raw diet. Now, I have read about this recently because a client came in there, same type of thing. Some people just absolutely believe in this, and they think that if you don't, there's something wrong with you. So I researched it, and there is no scientific evidence that that type of diet is better for animals. As a matter of fact, they imply that it might not be as healthy because, you know, this
pathogens in the meat or anything?
Well, it's usually someone does it at home. It's a diet that you put together at home. And so, like with the protein question, there has to be a ratio, a balance between, you know, fats, proteins, and carbohydrates. And if you are not getting that right balance, it's not healthy for your animal. And, you know, store-bought diet, they are strict standards of cleanliness, quality, and control that go into those foods. And, you know, you don't need to go to your veterinarian and buy a prescription food. All of the foods that are sold at a supermarket, you know, your premium, your IAMs and the Hills and those types of food, those are all really high-quality food. So until someone proves that that's a better diet, I would not recommend it.
Okay, good.
Huh. Question over here.
Yes, I've had a Labrador, and now I have a Cocker, and they had the same problem. It's a little red circle with like a flower on top. Is that something that needs to be attended to?
Okay, so how long has it been there?
Well, on my Cocker that I have right now, it's been there a year in one spot, and another one probably 6 months on another spot.
Well, I can tell you generally what, I mean, obviously I can't see the spot from here, right, but I can tell you generally what I would recommend.
Okay.
You know what the spot looks like better than anyone else. You know if it's getting bigger. You know if it's painful when you touch it. If it gets hard, large, starts to weep and ooze. And I would say that if it's there for more than a few months, it should be looked at by a veterinarian.
Okay, thank you so
and
much.
And Cocker's the same way as Labradors. They're very predisposed to yeast infections in their ears. And that's, I'm sure you're familiar with the problems in their ears. So
right,
they,
I have one. One ear is okay, but the other one seems
right
to give us trouble.
And it could be nothing. It could be something worth looking at. So, I mean, if it's, how long has it been there?
The first one's been there about a year, and the second one about 6 months.
And it, you know, is it? Does
it's not growing.
Does it seem to bother your dog? Does it chew at it, or
he doesn't want me to touch it? But I don't think it's because it's painful. He
okay,
just is a little sensitive.
Yeah, I would recommend getting someone to look at it.
Okay.
At a minimum.
Thank you.
Oh, I have another question.
Sure.
Somebody brought this up recently. What I've heard of, it's a funny term, but it's what and I don't think that my dog doesn't like overly chew her feet or anything like that, but I notice especially like at work, we're kind of in an enclosed space and she's under my desk, and she definitely gets that what they call Frito feet smell. It's sort of that's the only way I can describe it. It's kind of like it's not like really gross smelling, but it's definitely you know, kind of a it's like stale Fritos is what it smells like. And I wonder if that's anything wrong, anything I should be concerned about, because I feel her paws all the time, and there's nothing wrong in the pads, there's no moisture or anything like that, but just that I notice in that enclosed space that she does get that kind of foot thing, stinky foot going.
Is there any color change to the hair? Is it?
I don't know.
Sorry.
Last time I was at the vet, there was nothing mentioned. I was just there like 2 weeks ago.
What can happen if they lick their feet excessively? They get what's called salivary staining. The hair can change colors, and sometimes, you know, if you think of a foot pad, essentially is almost like the environment the same as in the ear. If they get a lot of hair in there, it's a good environment for yeast and bacteria to grow. So what can happen is they can have another bacteria or yeast infection in there as well. You can have the hair in between the digits clipped, and that'll kind of allow it to dry a little bit more. Some dogs chew their feet because they're bored.
Yeah.
It might just be a behavioral component too. So if it's not a problem and the dog doesn't seem painful, I wouldn't worry too much about it. They can get what's called a learned component to this as well. So maybe the foot was itchy for a while and they got real comfortable chewing it, and so now they just do it out of boredom.
Well, being a Labrador, she doesn't have, like the Goldens that have the longer hair between the digits. She doesn't have that. So I don't think that's the issue. But, yeah, maybe it is just a behavioral thing, and I've got to tell her to knock it off instead of licking her foot. Yeah.
Looks like no other questions. All right.
Thank you.
All right. This was great. All right, well, we want to give Dr. Craig a huge round of applause. Thank him so much for coming. I don't know about you guys, but I'd love this stuff. I mean, I'm talking about vesicles and pustules and all this stuff. It's just fascinating to me. I love it. I should have, I think sometimes if I had the...
There's a quiz at the end.
Yeah, I was taking notes. I was recording the whole thing. So I'm going to go home and transcribe the whole thing and write a book. Anyway, so let's give Dr. Craig another big round of applause. Well, it looks like we are ending our program a little earlier than usual, so let's just plan on meeting back here at 12 o'clock. Welcome, one and all, to the 2008 Fall GDUC Luncheon Program. So we have it's kind of a mellow one this time. We will start now by making introductions. Hopefully we have a couple of mic runners here. So I will start the microphone around to my left.
There you go.
I'm Ann Kaiser, your president, with Daytona, who is my fourth dog. She's 6 years old. She just turned six a little over a week ago Thursday, and she's an awesome dog. So that's it. She's from GDB.
My name is Lillian Scaife with my guide dog, Yellow Lab, Ken. I almost said Fantasia. Caitlin. Caitlin is my second dog, and she is six.
Thank you.
I am Ramona Craig from Guide Dogs of America, a student or graduate, with my black lab, Brooke, and she is going to be 10.
Eat it. Okay. Hi, my name is Aisha McKinney-Went, GDB. I have a golden lab cross named Toro, my second dog. Great.
Miss Metz, your ticket. You may speak now.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Yeah, sure.
Hi, this is Pam Metzen, and I have a black lab, female maiden, and I've heard every joke. She is from GDB, and she's the second dog. She's four years old.
You may speak. You have paid.
I paid my dues, so Perry said I can talk now. This is Ken Metz, and I have a black lab by the name of Flora, or whatever else I may call her sometimes. And Flora is 4.5 from GDB San Rafael.
My name is Lee Morton, and I have Ed. He's my fourth dog from Guide Dogs for the Blind Oregon campus, and he's about 3.5, and he is my first boy.
Mazel tov.
Hello, I'm Glenda Castle, delegate for San Diego chapter. I do not have a dog right at this present moment, but I recently filled out paperwork to finally go get a guide dog after all these many years. But in the meantime, I have my cane. I call Charlie.
This is Brandy Morgan. I have a wonderful yellow lab from Guide Dogs for the Blind. We went to the Oregon campus. His name is Eubanks. He's 2.5 years old and goes by Yubi.
And he is Ed's brother.
My name is Penny Valdovinos. I'm from Bakersfield. I have a fantastic dog named Brenda. She's from the CNI. She's 5 years old. She's a golden retriever, and she's great.
Hi, I'm Nancy Unger. I have a beautiful, wonderful, the best dog I've ever had. His name is Nigel from Guide Dogs of the Desert, like Laguna Niguel. He'll be 3 on January 1st. I've had him, it will be a year next month. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Vivian Younger, and I have a dog. Her name is Hawaii, and she's a black lab, and because I'm around a lot of children, I her public name is Aloha.
Hi, my name is Stephanie Rood. I'm just a cane user, supporting you guys.
Yay!
Thank you.
Mike. Hi, my name is Lynn Coates. I have a retired guide actually in the room watching pay-per-view. His name is Vista. I'm just here with my white canador.
Hi, I'm Steve Flerman, and I have a black male lab named Gipper from Guide Dogs of America. That was originally trained by Bob Wendler, who has my best blessing. He's now with Guide Dogs of the Desert.
Hi, I'm Cindy Flerman. I have a yellow lab named Pedro from the Seeing Eye, who is 5 years old.
Bill Gillespie, my guide is Garrett. He turned 6 on the 22nd of this month from GDV.
Bear O'Brien, Santa Rosa, and I do not have a dog.
Hi, I'm Glenn Judson. I'm a puppy raiser from Guide Dogs of America. I have my 6th guide dog puppy in training with me. His name is Jack. He's a little chocolate lab, and he's 11 weeks old.
I'm Sherry Gabriel Sinanis. And I have my golden retriever, Bruce, from Guide Dogs of America. And he's 4.5 years old. He's my leap year boy.
And who trained him?
And Glenn Jensen trained him.
No, Bob Wendler did.
Well, Glenn Jensen raised him, and Bob Wendler did some fantastic training on the public transit systems with Bruce.
Hi, I'm Tony Candela with Department of Rehabilitation and the Department of Rehabilitation's representative to the Guide Dog Board, and I'm just here to say hello and stay with you just for a little while, and then I'll be going to another luncheon. So hello, everybody.
Thank you.
I'm Donna Lewis from Long Beach with Guide Dog Rhyme. She's my 7th dog. She's a yellow lab from GDB.
I'm a sighted person, and I'm Diana, and I'm a companion to Susan Henry, and we live together.
Hi, I'm Susan Henry. Oops.
Just relax.
Okay.
Here goes. Please.
Hi, I'm Susan Henry. My guide dog is Peyton. She's a black lab. She turns 10 in March, and she's from, we're from Guide Dogs of America.
Hi, I'm Keith Tomlinson. I'm a field manager. Thank you. It's good to be here with so many friends, and I look forward to talking with each of you later in the afternoon. Thanks.
My name's Ariel Gilbert. I'm the outreach manager at Guide Dogs for the Blind. All right. And I'm here with my brand new female German Shepherd, long hair, named Splash. And she just turned 2 October 1st, and she's my 6th guide dog.
Okay. My name is Melissa Hudson, and I have I'm a first-time guide dog user. She's a female black Labrador retriever named Anya, and she'll be 7 at the end of January. And I love using guide dogs. They're awesome. From GDB.
Okay. Hi, everyone. My name is Nikki, and I'm with a guide dog yellow lab named Coral. I'm also a first-time guide dog user in from the Guide Dogs for the Blind. Thank you. Yeah.
Hi, everyone. Buenas tardes. My name is Norma Guerrero. I am a human in training for in preparation for a guide dog. And I have my cane Seymour. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. I'm Belinda Zellickson with Guide Dog Valley, who I call Valley Girl. And she's from GDB, and she'll be 10 in December, and she's guide dog number 4, and she's a golden retriever.
Hi, I'm Mary Dean.
I'm from Guide Dogs of the Desert, and I'm the admissions coordinator.
I'm Doug Weil from Occupaw's Guide Dog Association, Madison, Wisconsin, Packers and Old Milwaukee Beer. I'm out here visiting friends. I'm originally started at Guide Dogs in San Rafael and out here seeing old friends.
And I'm Bob Windler. Nice to see you guys. I'm not working today, but you didn't really expect me to miss this, did you? All right. Look forward to visiting with you guys after lunch.
Hi, I'm Pat Whitehead, the puppy raising leader. And, oh, thank you. The Poop Patrol, well known as. And I'm currently raising my 20th guide dog puppy for Guide Dogs for the Blind. Thank you.
And last of all, I'm Perry Wolf, the other hat of Pat LaFrance Wolf. And we had some other people come in here.
Hi, I'm Nellie Emerson, and I'm here with a German Shepherd named Wicker, who was trained at the Seeing Eye. And she'll be six in December.
I'm Larry Freeman from San Diego, California. Yeah, I'm a cane user, but I think guide dogs are cool.
Hello, my name is Monique McCorley. I'm also a white cane user, and I'm supporting all my friends who have guide dogs.
Hello, I'm Jean Marie Moore with Amazon Herbs. Keith, Troy was looking for you yesterday. Let's see, I have Waldo, a Labradoodle, and he's a Bob Wendler dog from GDD. And he is also going to be 3 on January 1st, so something was going on over there.
Hi, my name is Linda Samolsky. I'm working with Bob Wendler. And I am the Student Services Coordinator for Guide Dogs of the Desert, and I have Buster at my feet. He will be 3 the 1st of January.
Hi, my name is Dee Dee Mann, and I have a yellow lab named Zinni from Guide Dog School of America, and he is my 6th dog from Pasadena.
Hello, I'm Jerry Arakawa with Yellow Lab Tova from Guide Dogs for the Blind in Oregon, trained under the supervision of the great Keith Labor. And those of you who may remember, just a real quick thing, my first dog, Arlington, who was he was the food hound and the guide dog, the fastest guide dog I've ever seen. He's working as a therapy dog in Columbus, Ohio, with my sister, and his intelligence obviously hasn't left him because she says that he will not let patients touch him unless he's able to go under the bed to look for any food crumbs first.
Hi, I'm Pat Wolf with Guide Dog. Thank you. Well, Guide Dog Shannon. She's 9.5 from GDA, little black lab, and she's doing real well for a 9.5-year-old dog.
I'm Marvelina Gray, and I have a 5-year-old German Shepherd from Seeing Eye named Darla.
Hello, everybody. This is Mary Beth Randall, the treasurer here for GDUC. I am here with my 3rd guide dog, Tennyson, who just turned 3 years old last Sunday, and he is from GDB. He's a male yellow lab.
If the school presenters are all ready, we will start with the school reports. I don't know who wants to go first. I think we have several folks.
Close that door.
Okay. Oh, yeah, it's a little bit noisy. I believe we have... Oh, let me say one thing. First thing, I talked to Andy Crusoe from GDA.
Oh, yay!
And she informed me, unfortunately, today is beginning of class day, and most of the class is from out of state, so they're all off doing airport runs, so no speaker from GDA today. But she emailed me somehow I didn't get it. Anyway, I've been having some kind of issues with the Wi-Fi. Sometimes it's working very well and sometimes not. So this morning I was not able to download my email for whatever reason. So she said, if worse comes to worse, just to let everybody know, you know, say hey from GDA. Everything's pretty much as it was. The last report, no real major changes. They have two new apprentices. I believe they have, as of since the last meeting, one new licensed instructor. No changes as far as the building or anything like that, but she just wanted to send everyone her best, and she loves us all, and she will hopefully be back. And they have a hybrid car in their training facility as well. So,
hey, quiet, please.
So we have, microphone got away from me. So we have Keith Tomlinson here from, I don't know, who's actually doing the, is it Ariel? Are you doing the report for GDA? Ariel Gilbert is doing the update for GDB. See, the microphone knew I boo-booed and it went out on me. Holy cow. Okay, Ariel Gilbert from GDB.
GD, one of those.
Well, it's one of the GD. God dang it. Bob, Linda Samulski is going to be getting the report, but right. Grabbing the microphone out of my hand. Go.
It's one of them blind dog schools.
Want me to go first?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll go ahead and get started. This is Ariel from, I know you think it's GDA, but it's GDB. And I'm going to give you, I'll try not to drone on too long. You can throw things at me if I do. I wanted to let you know that, excuse me, Nancy Gardner, our CEO, has now been at Guide Dogs for a year. It's hard to believe. And she's just doing great. She has done a wonderful job in really getting to understand all the different departments. She's gone under blindfold, worked down in the kennels, really gotten an idea. Now moving into training department, looking at some changes that have happened over the last year. One of the biggest sort of concepts that has changed is our adult learning program, recognizing that a 17-year-old and an 80-year-old may learn in a different way. And just individuality between different people. Some people learn information differently than others. So we've looked at how can we provide the information in a different way. So one of the ways we've done that is after you've done your home interview, we look at what are the goals you want to accomplish at the home when we're at the home interview. And then before you even come to class, all lectures are now provided on MP3 files. And when you're in class, we have a partnership now with HumanWare for the Victor Reader Stream, so all students are provided with a Victor Reader Stream while they're in class, and they have the option after class is over to purchase it for $100. And no, it's $150. I'm sorry. The retail price is $325, and Guide Dogs is selling for $150. And those of you who are alumni, after January, we will have a certain number of them available for alum at the $150 price. So stay tuned to Alumni News. That's been a really great way to listen to the information prior to actually coming to the, quote, lectures. And instead of lectures, what we now have are discussions about the material that you've reviewed prior to coming in to that daily lecture. We also, a year ago, started the program where we have the training class specialists on each campus who are both blind. Stacy Patnode in San Rafael and Aaron Rumer in Oregon. And they've both been on the job for a year now. They work all the dogs that are in a string prior to going into class, and also do a lot of the discussions and work while they're in class. So they work both with the current string and in class with every class that comes through. And then we have resident attendants who are also blind, and they stay with the students at night instead of instructors. We have independent routes so that when you're in class, if you would like to go off campus with your dog, you have the option to do that while you're in class. And that gives you an idea of, you know, how it's going to go, and you just let the instructor know before you leave. And they, you know, if you have any problems, you just call on the cell phone. We also as well have the hybrids, and part of traffic training while you're in class is with the hybrid and with a regular vehicle. I just went through that, and it was amazing to me, because, you know, when you're in class, you start recognizing the sound of the same van going around, you know, and, oh, they're going to be pulling out of the driveway pretty soon, and you start recognizing the sound of the vehicle engine, not with the hybrid, and it truly is kind of startling when you get a traffic check with a hybrid. Let's see if I've forgotten anything. I think those are the big areas. I don't think I've missed anything. So before I put you all to sleep and you go into a food coma, I'll pass it on to Bob.
Linda?
Well, this is not Bob. I'm not Bob. So, start.
But it's all about Bob, though.
So, if you want to start throwing rotten tomatoes or anything like that, that's okay. I can dodge them. That's all right.
I'm saying that because I'm right here.
Yeah. Hi, everybody. My name is Linda Samolsky. I used to be Linda Flores. I moved to Guide Dogs of the Desert. I moved to Palm Springs in June, and I started my job as a student services coordinator in July. And one of the things that I do is I help students from the application process to graduation and follow-up. And Mary Dean, my cohort, my coworker, my friend, is here, as well as Bob. And we make a great team. Guide Dogs of the Desert is really on the way to doing some really premier things. And we have an excellent executive director. She's a visionary. She really wants to see the school be successful in all of its endeavors. The other thing that I do is I advocate for students as well as in accessibility, as well as I'm working on some of the advocacy issues along with CCB. So that's part of my job as well. We are a small school. We have no more than 6 students per class, which makes our classes very family-like, in a family-like setting. People feel very comfortable. We have a class coming in on Monday. Our classes are very diverse. We can work with people who have other disabilities as well as vision loss. Let's see, what else can I tell you? Oh, I know. I'm coming. our services are very personalized. And so the downside is that if you apply, you may have a longer wait, but then when you get in, it will be well worth it because our training is so personalized. We are now starting to use German Shepherds again. Thank you. So we will probably have some I know, I'm coming, I'm coming. So we have the German Shepherds. We also are doing crossbreeding. Buster is a Goldador. And so we've had a really good success rate with that. I think, Bob, when are our German Shepherd puppies coming back?
We should have some coming in about 8 months.
Cool. And you know, we're doing the quiet car training. We're doing that as our traffic checks, and we are a great advocate for doing something regarding the quiet cars so that people are safe. We now have 6 licensed instructors, plus we have an instructor from England who is very experienced working on his license, and we have an apprentice who's going into training on Monday. One of the things that we're incorporating into our classes are exercise class. And it's really cool because people really have said that they enjoy it on their exit interviews. They said that it helps them to feel better. It helps them to relax and to strengthen and to just be able to move out better as they're walking. So that's really a cool thing. We're not doing the food training. We have the basic training. And the other cool thing that we have, this is really, really cool, you guys. We have just opened our depot, which is we're using as a lounge for people to stay as they're in class. Well, part of that depot is a store. And we sell pet supplies in there. But the really cool thing is that anyone, it doesn't matter from what school or if you haven't attended a school, anyone who has a small business or who does art projects is invited to put their product in our store. And we will then give you 30%, I believe it's 30% of the sale if you sell in our store. So we are trying to help the economy, and we're trying to help people who are blind supplement their income as well. So that is a really cool thing. So maybe Bob has something else to add that I...
He's not working today.
Yes, he is. I said.
What'd you have, Gene? What's that?
The best part.
What? And we have our home training for people who are second-time users. You can ask about our home training. We've done several in the past month.
Labradoodles.
Yes, and there's Labradoodles too, crossbreeds. Yes. So.
Okay. Very good, Linda. Thanks a lot for being on board. Number one, I think that having Linda on board is definitely a step in the right direction for our organization. So. We have made a lot of changes over the last year at Guide Dogs of the Desert, and it's our hopes to continue to move forward. The support that we're getting from our community is something that we're very, very happy with. Linda mentioned the depot that we have, and that depot is located in a place in downtown Palm Springs where we're getting a lot of visibility from the snow bunnies that head to our neck of the woods this time of year. And one of the other things that we do out of there is a community outreach to just people that have dogs, and it's not just for guide dog users, but we're there to help educate normal guide dog users or normal dog users as well. We have a speaker series there on a weekly basis where we have experts come in canine CPR and first aid and share that information with the public that are down there. But being as visible as we are down there and being able to bring in products that our clients and visually impaired people are manufacturing or making to help them them to promote themselves is just part of the education process, and letting people know that just because you're a cane user or a guide dog user that you're not productive. So education is part of what we're trying to do down there. Our hopes are in the very near future to open a third depot in Scottsdale, Arizona, followed by one in Las Vegas, Nevada. So we're trying to get out there and to let people know that we're not just a little school in Palm Springs as far as that goes, but we're going to continue to be the little school and not grow beyond what our potential is. And we want to maintain that small school atmosphere. Linda did mention that we are continuing to use poodles. My feeling is, and has been, is every single school has its own niche. And you guys know that, you guys that have known me for a long time, although my allegiance is to the school that I'm working at, but I don't necessarily just work for a school. I work for you. And that's the philosophy that I'm bringing forth to my apprentices. You know, I've devoted my life to doing what I do, and that is to help you guys to become more productive. They sign my paycheck, but I work for you guys, and that's the philosophy that we're bringing about for all the people that come to work for our organization. Linda, you had something else?
Just one more thing that I'm really, really proud of. I was able to set up the Braille printer the other day, and now we have Braille literature, and I think we can send it out, you know, so... No, we don't have a notebook. No, just little by little, we're getting these things set up. Jean Marie. So we'll get there. But I am proud that we're able to now pass out Braille literature.
Great. Great. Always nice to see you guys. I'll be around for a little bit afterwards. And we'll see you in... Where are we going in July? I'll see you in Sacramento. We'll see you guys in Sacramento.
In the spring.
Yay! In the spring.
April. Wow, let's give these guys a great hand. I'm so proud of them. I have to add one other personal item. Linda and I grew up together, so I've known Linda since I was in like first grade. So many, many. We haven't grown up though. That's the problem.
How many years? But,
oh, about 79, something like that. Anyway, no, it was many years, many, many moons ago. I won't even tell you. It's like half a century or some god awful thing like that. Our adventures in Tijuana. Well, that's another book. That's, you know what? I think I'm blushing. Actually, it just embarrassed me. Like, my misspent youth. I don't know. I know, where did it go? I don't know. Anyway, yes, we had many, many adventures. Actually, we were both recruited by a friend of ours at the time. A lot of you probably know Don Queen. And Don Queen got a hold of both of us and asked us if we would be interested in participating in the founding of a school for the blind in Tijuana. Of course, we were living in San Diego at the time, so it was, you know, about 20 miles away. And we both said yes, we would. And that's Linda and I kind of reconnected, and we taught Braille and whatever else that we could come up with, and had a really good time for about a year down there. So, you know, it was a like 2 days a week thing. But that's another piece of history. But I am so proud of Linda being in this job, because it's something I think that a lot of us go, man, wouldn't you love to work at a guide dog school? Can you think of anything better? And there she is, you know, doing probably what she really loves doing. And I just can't imagine. Every school needs a Linda, you know, like that. So that's, you know, that's it. So let's give both our schools a big round of applause. And there was that gentleman from Wisconsin. Was he? Did he want to speak about his?
You thought you were going to get away with it, didn't you?
got to eat it.
If they want to move to Wisconsin, go train them a dog.
Just because I start off talking about beer, I got everybody's attention. My name is Doug Weil. I'm a director of training for a small organization in Madison, Wisconsin called Occupaws Guide Dog Association. It was founded by and the president is Nicole Metacroft. She is legally blind. Her situation was she could not get away to go to a school to receive a guide dog. She trained her own dog. She had some dog training experience. She ordered a harness, and she basically trained her own dog. And she felt there must be other people out there with the same need or in the same situation who can't go to a school and would like to start an in-home training. And that was the birth of Occupaws, and it started 3 years ago. When she found me, and that was kind of through a friend of a friend. It was I believe in fate, so something hooked us up. But she found me and found out that I had been a trainer at San Rafael for a number of years, wanted some help. So she asked me to come down, take a look at her and her dog, and how can I make them better. So I went down. She had trained a very, very large German Shepherd. I don't think he would fit on a floor of any car. Or probably not under too many tables. But for not knowing what she was doing, she did a pretty decent job. She wanted him to be better. But he was already 5 years of age, pretty big dog, nice dog. And she also had, someone had donated her this younger Labrador. So after watching her work, she, not knowing what she was doing, did not follow the basics of guide work and had made some mistakes. And versus trying to retrain her dog to fix some of the errors she had made, like following the wheelchair ramps no matter where they were, that was not good. I said, why don't we start with this Labrador, looked like a very nice dog, and go from there. And I'll help you teach you so that you learn how to do it correctly. And that's how we got started. I did that dog. Well, initially she said, how about training this dog for me? I was going to show her how to do it and help her. And I said, no, I'm too old, too fat, too out of shape, can't do this anymore. This is a young man's job. Well, after some begging and pleading and so on and so forth, my wife says, oh, well, I would help you. We can do this. And so that's how that got started. My wife never did help me. I wound up doing it all. And after my first day of road work, and I realized how old, fat, and out of shape I was, that's when I went to the beer store and got a 12-pack and said, what did I get myself into? But we made it work, and I'm glad it got me back into it. This past year, I've trained four more and put out four in-home placements for her. I just finished two of them last week. So they are a young school. They're up and coming. They have some they use only Labradors, very English-bred quality Labradors that they're breeding their own now. They're also they have some very good donors from the Illinois area that are breeding English Labs. And so that's specifically what they use. I guess that's about nonprofit 503C or 503, whatever it is. It is nonprofit, no charge to the person. And they go and they want to stay within the state of Wisconsin. They're not looking to go outside. It's just going to be an in-home base, and that way the follow-up is there. They're very local, the training is very personalized, customized. We go out, we interview the students, find out where they live, where they work, how they do it, what they need, what they're looking for, and then we start looking at the dogs we have in our lineup and seeing which one is going to work best for them. Then I can start doing the personalized training to fit their needs.
Glenn Jensen, do you have a website?
Yes, occupaws.org. OCCUPAWS.org. And it's just been updated with our last current graduates. You're welcome. Am I off the hook now?
Good night, Doug.
Give a big hand.
Boss lady.
Okay. I guess we have time to entertain a few questions. So anyone has any questions for either of these folks?
Most exotic dog yet.
Yeah, so let's go for it.
Okay. Here we go. Jerry, you hit here soon.
Well,
I like you eating it like an ice cream.
Oh, all right. Okay.
Well, just a comment, and you know, we are so fortunate to have three schools in California. Well, you know, I know some of us just take it for granted that we get excellent service, but when you hear, I'm always affected hearing all these three schools and how quality of a program they provide, and we're just really, really blessed to have these great schools in California. One of the great things that really comes across to me is how responsive they are to the ever-changing needs of guide dogs and consumers. In fact, I was just talking to Keith Tomlinson today, and I had asked early when I was ready to retire Arlington that they really make a special effort among all the other 150 things I wanted out of a guide dog, that the dog be a smaller size dog. Those of us in Southern California, particularly in L.A., use Access Services, and that's a whole story in and of itself. But the need for the smaller bred dogs is really becoming more and more critical. So, again, they were very responsive. My dog is just the right size for me, and I really have to say hats off to the schools for attempting to meet as many of our needs as possible. And Keith said they're really looking at the smaller bred dog to meet those needs. So again, congratulations to the schools for looking at that issue.
Okay, thank you, Jerry. Okay. I'm just kidding.
Hello. One of the things I just want to comment on about the responsiveness, but when I got my first, I'm sounding like parent right now, but when I got my first guide dog back in 1986, you know, there was no talk about during a guide dog course having a chance to go off campus. You stayed on the campus until you graduated, and you did not take that dog off campus with you. There were no, maybe they had a token person here and there, but basically no blind or visually impaired people worked at the school. It was very, I would say paternalistic is probably the best word I'll use, but just look at all the schools, just how full circle we've come. Both of our presenters today were consumers who work at the school, and you know, we've got people on the boards now. Just so many things have changed, and we have the off-campus training. But one of the things I want to put in a plug for... My first dog was 21 inches. My second dog was 20 inches. My third little girl, Elaine, who is enjoying her retirement and swimming in the river, and she was 22, and Ed's 23 and a half. I kind of am getting to where I like the... Maybe I wouldn't want a 26-foot He-Man, but I kind of like this 22, 23-inch size. Just when you get a little older and your balance isn't quite what it used to was, it's kind of nice to have that little extra size. So I don't know. I like variety.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, here, coming. Okay. Aisha, eat it like an ice cream.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, this is Aisha, and My first dog name is Ledbetter. And I would always say, well, Ledbetter has led me better than my cane. Ledbetter is a black lab who I believe was 25 inches at the shoulder. I am about 6 feet tall. Okay, and now my second dog is 27 inches at the shoulder, and he's a cross. He's a lab and golden retriever cross, and I keep saying, why do I get these big old horses? But Keith told me that my dogs fit me in their in their stride, because my stride is long. Yeah, gallop. There it is. Because when he gallops, I'm running after him. So, but I love it because he is an assertive dog and he moves the people out of the way. So when they see him coming, he's like Moses that parts the Red Sea. So
I would like a little bit more of a compact dog for access, but he gets in there and he can curl up into a little ball. So, but he fits my needs, his temperament, and everything. So bigger dogs, you know, I'm not really looking down on them. I love them. Okay, both my boys.
There you go.
Okay, this is Pam, and I have to say the thing I liked about going back to GDB the second time, and I did lose Delancey, and she is in dog, she is having a ball, she's spoiled rotten, she's a therapy dog, she jumps on the bed, she'll speak to the kids if she likes them, if not she goes the other direction, the thing that I like the changes I'm hearing about GDB is the fact that they're not doing the lectures anymore. Those were boring. Especially for the retrains to go back and hear the same thing over and over again. And then to be able to go off campus with the dog. And now Maiden is a retrain. And she's something else, actually. Whoever matched me with Maiden did a good job. Her stride, her pace. I do have to slow her down sometimes because my old legs cannot be running all the time. No. But she's... The general leader is the best thing they've ever come up with. Her last year, as Keith knows, I had a hard time with her here last year. She was puppy distracted, people distracted, food distracted, everything distracted. And I almost sent her back to GDB. And then I went to the convention in Louisville, and I talked to Terry. And he said, if she has to wear the general leader all the time, put it on her. He said, buy her a bright red one. She lives in California. Matches her collar. And it does, and it's made a big difference in the way she and I work together. I'm not as stressed out with her. So I have to say the school does a very good job in paying attention to what you're doing with your dog and making sure that they match the dogs up with you. And I am so grateful I get little dogs because she is 21. She and Delancey, the only difference between she and Delancey is she's longer. Otherwise, they look like sisters.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, I'm Cindy Flerman. I teach Living Skills at Braille Institute, and this question has come up from my students for Ariel. The new resident assistant program that Guide Dogs for the Blind has, the question I'm hearing from students is, besides the nurse, if there's a training issue, is there essentially any sighted staff on campus to deal with training issues, or is it left to the hands of the resident assistant, and has that worked out for folks in the time that it's been going on?
That's a great question, and as I pointed out, we've definitely done some adjusting of the jobs of both the RA and the TCAs throughout the year, and it's worked out actually really well. The RA is there through the night, and there is an instructor on call in case something were to come up that the RA isn't able to deal with. So there's always somebody, available to deal with a problem if it's a dog-related problem. But it's been very successful, and the feedback that we're getting from the students in class is, when they're there in the evening, it's been really nice to be able to go in and talk to a graduate and have that feedback, that ability to sit down, and they have counseling background, so they're able to, really talk with the students and help problem solve, and more on the human side of it rather than solving dog issues.
What are the hours that a training person is not there?
What are the hours that a training person is not there? I believe it's 7 p.m. to 7 a.m.
Are there other questions for Ariel? Oh, okay. Yeah, wait just a minute.
I'll bring the mic over as soon as I. I did neglect to mention one thing. I know some of you have got friends that have are either puppy raising or have puppy raised or do have dogs from the iDog Foundation in Phoenix, Arizona. I'm sure that those of you that are in the know that they're having some major difficulties with that organization right now. They do nothing but work with German Shepherds, and we in the past offered our assistance to not only puppy raisers and graduates, since we are in close proximity to the Phoenix area. And if any of you have friends or know of somebody that that is a graduate from that school and you are or they are having difficulties, we continue to offer assistance to those graduates from that school in the absence of having any instructors or puppy raiser coordinators there. So we're there for them. So if you hear about any problems, let us know.
Okay.
I'm behind you.
Okay. Hi, this is Vivian again. I wanted to let you know that because I'm not able to sit for long periods of time, I have back problems and knee problems. Guide Dog designed a program for me where they worked with me out of my home. And so what that involved was 10 days of training, 4 hours a day. And the unique part about it is that you're going to work on exactly what you where you need to go and what's going to work best for you. Like sometimes I have to use the wheelchair at the airport, and so Hawaii just didn't think she liked that idea, but you know she tolerates it when I have to do it occasionally. And I just wanted to say that I think the other schools do it. I'm not positive, but they've really made it a really positive thing for those of us that have multiple disabilities and wouldn't do as well for the length of time that it involves in traditional training. So I wanted to bring that up, and that's great. And so it's like you're in school. It's like, okay, here are your lectures, you know, and you review them. And, you know, I've had 5 dogs, and between, you know, one dog to another, I think it's when it's a long period of time, you know, like more than 2 years, that it's good for us retrained to listen to those lectures. And so then we're able to apply it to our lives, you know, what's happening in our lives. So that hadn't come up, and I wanted to mention that to you guys, that that's a great program for whichever school offers it for us.
Thank you. Uh-huh. Thank you.
We are done because general session is starting in 10 minutes or so. So, and let's thank everybody for coming again. That was excellent. All right. Thank everyone for coming. We will see you all in Sacramento in April. Thanks so much, and have a wonderful rest of the convention. Love y'all. Bye.